Joining me in studio now for a closer look at the equity space, Nick Kunzer from Bridge Stockbrokers. Thanks so much, Nick, for joining us today. So at a global level, we've got markets looking pretty muted at the moment. What do you see being the next catalyst? Because some have been pointing to third quarter earnings season. Is that going to be a game changer from here on out?
Good evening, Sha. I think definitely it's got to be the third quarter earnings season, because the market's pretty much glossed over the geopolitical risks, the North Korean problems, the debt ceilings, you name it. It's the market's climbed that wall of worry already. I do think that the earnings season is going to be a litmus test to how we finish out the rest of the year. Yes,
yeah.
I do.
Okay, so let's take a look at what you're expecting there, because I alluded to it a short while ago. Lots of apprehension ahead of the banks releasing results, and some concern about just how profitable they're going to be given the year that's been.
I think you're spot on with your analysis on that one, because a lot of these banks, like JP Morgan, like Goldman Sachs, over 70% of Goldman Sachs' revenue is derived from trading. Mm-hmm. JP Morgan, pretty much not as much, but very high. And as you alluded to in your intro, the volatility is not there. It's been a global phenomenon. We've had no volatility. We've had the VIX and various volatility indexes sitting at multi-decade lows. It's going to be difficult to foresee how these financial institutions generate trading income when everyone's effectively sitting on their hands. Like, what are their clients actually doing?
So if we've got earnings then that come through that disappoint and don't warrant the kind of valuations that we're seeing right now, how much of an unwind do we potentially see on the market scene?
Well, first of all, this is the old Wall Street grain, because we've already had them ratcheting down earnings expectations. In fact, they've ratcheted them down quite significantly in the last 2 weeks. So the likelihood they're going to, in inverted commas, beat is quite high. But these shares are priced to absolute perfection offshore. I mean, the stocks are expensive. We know the S&P 500 is expensive. And we've seen that the market's got to a stage now where when companies come out with earnings and, in fact, they just meet the expectations, the stock drops 5-10%. So I think the market is certainly priced to perfection. I think anything light that comes out in this earnings, the market's going to be punished. And financials always lead the markets higher and lower.
Absolutely.
As well.
Well, let's stack the JSC's performance then up against that, because it's maintained its momentum. It's stretched its winning streak to now, what, 9 consecutive sessions of gains. Is it warranted?
I think it is to a certain extent. Look, the all share is not expensive, but if you actually strip down, I mean, it's the old conundrum. Every asset manager is going to tell the same story. You know, you've got 5, 6, 7 stocks in South Africa that are dragging our index higher, but there's a large portion of our market that's underperformed, that are sitting on a lot of that are down 20-30% on the year. You know, there's a lot of cash that needs to be done. So yes, it's warranted to extend. And I think for local fund managers and local investors out there, today's performance, another new high on the back of a strengthening rand, it's got to bode reasonably well for South African shareholders.
And that, in large part, the impetus behind the kind of traction we've seen financials gain. For example, Nedbank, Standard Bank, Barclays Africa, the top three performers on the top 40 index today.
Absolutely. And the retailers as well. They're also Massmart put a good performance. Woolies, which everyone's hated for months, up for 4, 5, 6 days in a row now. There seems to be a lot of bottom picking in South Africa and a lot of positive performance, which I think bodes reasonably well for South African investors.
Absolutely. Well, we had Barloworld reaching levels last seen in 2007 as well. So we can see across the board where stocks have been undervalued, that momentum taking hold. Mondi, not so lucky today. So worst performer on the top 40 index, down 7.5% by the close. I mean, it's still continues to record profits. I mean, for the third quarter, it's up, what, 8% in underlying operating profit. It's that outlook moving ahead that seems to have taken the market off guard.
Absolutely. First of all, the outlook, yes. And also, bearing in mind, the stock's up 35-40% on the year. It's difficult to warrant then. If you're having, they're talking about earnings being a little bit subdued, they're talking about the outlook not being great. It's difficult to justify a 35% pop on the year. And if you have to compare apples with apples, what has Sappi done? Sappi's 30% that way behind. So it's probably warranted a little bit of a pullback. And I must say, the earnings, they didn't fill us with much confidence. I don't know if I'd be rushing into the share right now. And they're probably going to soften for the next few days.
Okay, so one to hit pause on potentially there. Let's take a look at Exxaro Resources. It's completed the sale of its shares in Tronox, and the proceeds now looking to go towards shareholders, also for future capital commitments as well. What have you made of the move and the direction, I guess, it's now taking the company, because it's more more focused operation that we're looking
definitely,
at?
Definitely sort of trim the fat a little bit, streamline the business, like what they're doing, like what the management is doing. And this ties into the long-term theme and of the recent trading update as well, where returning money towards shareholders and going towards that sort of war chest, so to speak. So very much like what they're doing.
Talking about war chest, PSG out with numbers. I mean, we've seen how Zeta really offset some or took the shine off some of what Capitec and Curro contributed towards PSG Group as a result. We knew more or less what was anticipated given the fact that its underlying assets have reported already. 1.2 billion rand war chest that it's sitting with. How easy do you see it being for a company like PSG Group to actually deploy?
It's not easy. You know, and I had to sort of smile to myself because Yanni Mouton is often compared with being the Boer Warren Buffett. It's exactly what Warren Buffett said a few months ago after Berkshire Hathaway earnings. They're sitting on a war chest of 150 billion. What do they buy with that money? Yeah. They don't see value. Ironically, in the same light, you know, what do the likes of PSG buy with that money when valuations are looking a little bit stretched, certainly from a global point of view? So I don't know what he does with that money. Maybe return it to shareholders.
What are you doing right now? What are you buying at the moment? What's your stock pick?
Our stock pick for tonight is going to be Telkom. I think we mentioned it last time. We still continue to find that the most value, trading on a PE of under 8, dividend yield of close to 5%. And once again, note to caution, we're still waiting to see what they do with SAA, with the government. If there's going to be a book build, we're urging our clients to wait and to participate in the book build rather than dive in right now.
Let's leave it there. Nick, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Nick Kunze is with Bridge Stockbrokers. Well, Cartrax reported stellar half-year results thanks to strong subscriber numbers in the bulk of its segments and internal cost containment measures yielding results as well. And that offsetting some of the pressure coming through from its rest of Africa operations, which saw declines in both revenue and subscriber numbers with a strong rand and weak economic conditions weighing. For more detail on what's been released today, I'm joined in studio by John Edmiston, who's Cartrax Deputy Global CEO. John, thanks so much for your time this evening. So you've recorded a 20% increase in headline earnings per share, and that's certainly nothing to scoff at. Talk us through what's been driving that growth momentum for you.
Well, look, growth has been our key objective for a long time now. But if you look at the different regions that we operate in, there's different growth targets in all of them. This year in particular, South Africa performed exceptionally well, despite the fact that the market's highly penetrated or relatively highly compared with the rest of the world. We expect South Africa's penetrated to the extent of around 30-35%. So there's still a long way to go, but we're tapping into the rest of the market, and of course one goes down into the lower end of the market as well. Mm-hmm. So we have plans around that. The other exceptional area of growth, which we always anticipated, is coming from Asia. They achieved well in excess of 100% growth in subscribers and revenue. Profit likewise showed a huge, or rather the bottom line showed a big improvement. We're very close to a break even. Mm-hmm. And if you take the constant calculation at a constant currency, it looks even better than is reflected.
One assumes, though, that when it comes to the Asia Pacific arena and the kind of contribution it's made to your growth, you've got to take somewhat of a low base effect into consideration too.
Yeah, that's correct, but it's no longer really a small base. We've got well in excess of 40,000 vehicles on the system now there, mm-hmm. but it's considerably lower than South Africa, for example, where we've got well in excess of 500,000 vehicles.
Absolutely. Looking at those subscriber numbers, I mean, you've grown your base from 115,000 to 666,000 active subscribers globally. I mean, that's phenomenal. 21% growth coming through. Is that more so as you extend your footprint across geographies and entrench it, or more so as customers start to see the imperative of owning technology like this?
Well, you know, in the last year, we haven't really extended our footprint very much. We established the footprint that we have now, give or take, a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But it's now accessing the markets in those regions. So it's really penetration in each region and organic growth from there, rather than regional growth into new regions at this point in time. We've got quite many countries, 24 countries, five continents. That's a lot of businesses for management to manage. And we're very cognizant of the fact that if you lose control, mm-hmm. you could have negative consequences. So we're very close to our businesses, and we believe we've got our hands full with what we've got, and we must now really penetrate each one of those countries in to a greater effect.
When you're engaging with your customers, I mean, what sense are you getting of them seeing the value imperative here? Because one assumes it's that tough economic climate that's seeing business become more conscious of fleet management, vehicle tracking, etc., as they look to control costs and improve productivity in a very strained economic climate.
Of course, that there's an element of that, but I think business is now starting to become aware of what telematics can really do for it. So I don't believe we're really cyclical. It's good or bad times. We seem to, buck the trends. So the benefits from fleet management and cost savings apply equally to an educated market. So I think a lot of it has revolved around education and taking the mystique out of tracking and this technology over many years. Mm-hmm. Likewise, of course, the trend has moved very much from cash sales, which is a higher upfront cost and can be a big expense for a company to pay for 1,000, 2,000 vehicles for a unit to be installed, now into the rental market. And in fact, I mean, I can remember back probably to 17 years ago in the industry when rentals first came out in this country. That was the big kicker in making our business, our industry successful, mm-hmm. because it brought down the cost of entry to your clients and increased the market size as a consequence.
Absolutely.
And I think that is applying across the world.
So having said what you have then, how much pricing power does this afford you? Because you've got your operating profit margins up 32%, and one wonders if that's more so a feature of your pricing power or internal efficiencies that you've managed to extract.
Look, I would say we are a very low-cost producer. That's how we designed, and that's how we structured. Mm-hmm. So that gives us these higher margins. There are pricing pressures, and there's high competitiveness in the industry, which has arisen over quite a few years now. But that again, that competitive nature, which maybe certainly has driven prices down since the inception of tracking, is actually an advantage for us because it again has increased the market size and the ability to penetrate. So it's a price volume sort of mathematical equation, and that if you manage that right and you get the balance right, you end up with a really positive results.
Absolutely. Well, let's leave it there. Thanks so much, John, for having joined us in studio this evening.
You.
Of course, John Edmiston is Cartrack's Deputy Global CEO. And while Cartrack tracks them, BMW makes them. And the luxury German car brand seems to be making inroads in China. BMW is reportedly in talks with Chinese car maker GWM on a possible joint venture. The news was well received by the market, pushing GWM's shares up by a fifth. Let's take a look at this report.
It launched no less than 12 new energy-efficient models at the Frankfurt Auto Show this year, and it seems BMW isn't content with just one Chinese venture. Reports it's looking to form an alliance with Great Wall Motor sent the Chinese firm's shares up nearly a fifth.
BMW at the moment is already the second leading premier car manufacturer within China. Is obviously trying to push into that first spot, but it's getting increasing competition from Mercedes, who are the third most popular there.
BMW is China's second largest premium brand after Volkswagen's Audi. Its sales there grew by 11% last year, but Mercedes enjoyed 26% growth thanks to a fresher model lineup. Alternative fuels remain the focus. China wants hybrid or electric cars to make up a fifth of auto sales by 2025. It's loosening joint venture regulations to help.
Reportedly, they are going to be creating a joint factory. And so again, you would expect in that joint factory that new models would be created, and obviously new models bring greater potential for bigger market share within China, which is a hugely growing market.
That's not lost on automakers. The drive for Chinese growth is everywhere. Ford, Tesla, Daimler and General Motors have all announced plans to make electric vehicles in China.
Welcome back. Well, the drama in Spain is far from over. We now have the Spanish Prime Minister and Catalan President pushing for more dialogue on the effects of the referendum. Amidst it all, how have these developments been impacting markets? Let's cross to Bronwyn as she gets some global markets perspective from the team standing by at the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. Bronwyn.
Thanks, Alicia. Well, did they or didn't they? That seems to be the question most are asking when it comes to Catalonia's independence. The region's separatist leader made a rather ambiguous statement yesterday evening, this effectively putting the ball back in Spain's court, with the Prime Minister now asking the Catalan government for clarity on whether it did actually declare independence or not. So for more detail, let's cross now to the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, where Janelle Dumoulin is standing by. Janelle, do we have an answer yet? It does seem that markets were pleased that an outright declaration of independence wasn't made, as we saw Spain's IBEX gain some ground today.
Markets were more or less pleased with this outcome. Now, European stocks have flattened out somewhat, but the exception remains Spain's IBEX. It's maintained its momentum throughout the trading day. Now, ambiguity aside, Puigdemont's response seems to have been the kind of de-escalation effort that investors were looking for. Rajoy's reaction a little bit less so, but investors seem to think that the Spanish government has at least been pushed into a position where it can't be seen to walk away from at least the option of talks. So investors see that as a way forward out of this crisis and as a way to salvage the business climate in Catalonia, which has definitely taken a hit throughout the saga.
In the meantime, Germany is eyeing growth of 2% this year. That's a sharp increase from its earlier estimate of 1.5%, because Europe's biggest economy is powering ahead. And the economics minister has said that the next federal government, though, needs to ensure that it stays this way.
Well, to be honest, I don't think she has anything to worry about. The German economy enjoys strong fundamentals, like strong private sector investment, like rising wages and record employment. Now, what they should perhaps worry about is the fact that the new government is likely to be dominated by fiscal hawks. Now, this means that we won't see an uptick in public spending on things like infrastructure or schools and universities. And this is something that has the business community somewhat worried, because of course, you have to invest in improving domestic capital globally. But for the next few years, Germany will be able to hold on to its momentum.
Onto some company news now. Reports say that BMW is looking to form a joint venture with Great Wall Motor. It would be the German company's second venture in China. BMW saying that it won't comment on speculation. But what are investors on your end making of a tie-up like this?
Well, the deal would supposedly center on building a new assembly plant in the Chinese city of Changshu. Now, while we obviously don't know what they would build there, investors are speculating that what they build there would almost definitely have to be hybrid cars or e-cars, in keeping with the Chinese government's ambitious targets. They've called for a fifth of all cars on Chinese roads to run on alternative fuel by 2025. Now, foreign car makers would also have to contend with new rules that would see them have to sell e-cars in order to be allowed to keep selling the traditional ones. Now, Great Wall shares surged on this news. Strangely, however, BMW's has not. Perhaps this indicates a reticence on the part of investors to buy into the buzz before firmer details are there.
Janelle, let's leave it there for today. Janelle Dumoulin is from Deutsche Welle. And that's a wrap of your global markets news. Alicia, it's back to you.
Thanks, Bronwyn, and that's all the news I've got for you at this hour. Do stay tuned for New Retirement Thinking straight after the break, and I'll see you back at 7 o'clock. What are you buying at the moment? What's your stock pick?
Our stock pick for tonight is going to be Telkom. I think we mentioned it last time. We still continue to find that the most value, trading on a PE of under 8, dividend yield of close to 5%. And once again, note to caution, we're still waiting to see what they do with the government. If there's going to be a book build, we're urging our clients to wait and to participate in the book build rather than dive in right now.
Let's leave it there. Nick, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, Nick Kunze is with Bridge Stockbrokers.